I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative. Toronto votes this October in the city's municipal election. In its lead-up, CGRU is reaching out to all candidates in the downtown core. Four downtown wards will elect new city councillors. This includes Ward 11, University Rosedale. Today, CGRU speaks with Ward 11 candidate Adam Golding on his decision to run, his platform, and how he hopes to bring the socialist anarchist voice to city council.
Adam Golding, who I am, is the candidate for Ward 11 that you should vote for. I live here in Ward 11. I've lived in University of Rosedale for 20 years. I was born here in Toronto. I grew up in Barrie. I studied music composition and cognitive science and AI and philosophy and math. I was a two-term student president in the Cognitive Science and Artificial Intelligence Student Association, organized events and many things there for 10 years, was recruited into the Pirate Party, worked in music software and in a music psychology lab, went out to teach computer programming, and specialized in live improvisation and teaching music theory and piano locally here in Kent. This is my piano studio here at my home. And got more and more, I knew I would go back to politics after my time in student politics, and a couple things happened. I mean, Donald Trump got elected, and more importantly, the New York Times had given Hillary a 98% chance of victory. So just for the perspective of, I was always researching many things, this and also in software terms, that was a bug that I had to work backwards from. And so I had to expand the spectrum of what I consumed, and also the sheer quantity. I quadrupled my time, my research time in politics when Trump was elected. And then when John Tory sued Khalil Sevright, I started focusing on the municipal level.
So can you please describe to me your political views and experience?
Well, right before we started recording, I mentioned that I worked for the NDP over the past year as well. That was after focusing on the municipal level, but that I then worked doing voter ID for the federal election and fundraising for the provincial election. And as I mentioned, I was recruited by the Pirate Party, involved with them briefly, and did a lot of research into voting systems and the like, and did student politics. My politics, what I often say these days is that I'm anti-authoritarian first and leftist second. So I identify as an anarchist in Chomsky's sense, even though the usual like simplistic anarchists on the internet say that he's not a real anarchist or something. He's the most famous, I don't know. But I like Proudhon, I like Chomsky. I was the first atheist in my Protestant family. I see that as a form of anarchism. I think Jesus and Socrates were both anarchists.
Mm-hmm. Can you, I guess for listeners, can you describe to me what does it mean to be a political anarchist?
To systematically question power. So there's skepticism, and you can question anything. You can question your own worth. You can question reality. I can question whether you have a mind. And, you know, in philosophy, we question all of these things. But anarchism is when you take that light of skepticism, for this, we'll use a metaphor here, and focus it through a lens to focus it on power. Skepticism focused on power. That's anarchism in a nutshell. Chomsky has a definition along those lines. He says it's a tendency in human thought to question power, domination, and submission. And at a time historically when we have this growing inequality, you know, we're approaching like French Revolution, if you look at the graphs, we need to question that inequality, that domination, that submission, and question power.
Okay. So getting to the main question here, why do you want to be Ward 11's newest city councillor?
Well, I certainly wouldn't run in any other ward. I'd have no intention of being a parachute candidate, which some people try to convince me to do, to run for the Spadina Fort York open race. But you know, this is where I live. I've lived here for 20 years. I was born here. I was born at Mount Sinai Hospital. So there's no question of me running somewhere else. There's question of me, theoretically, I could run at a different time. I didn't know that Mike Layton was going to drop out, but I originally hoped that he would run against John Tory because I want him out of there. And I'm not the very first person to use the hashtag evict John Tory, but I'm the person who's used it the most, I suppose, but I recommend it. There's a song to go with it too, if you go to adamgolding.ca, and keep that song in your mind at the polls, in your mind at the polls on October 24th. As I alluded to at the opening, I focused on municipal politics when Tory sued Khalil Sevright. And that is part of why I want this council seat, because I've seen how we've been voting on some of this stuff since. Now, unfortunately, some of it, voting wasn't enough. because we had a unanimous vote on a human rights approach to encampments. And I was at all of the major encamp clearings as a protester. I knew people who lived there. I was arrested at Lamport too. It was the 1 year anniversary of my arrest a few days ago, and of everyone else's arrest. There were over 30 people arrested, not to mention the tickets and charges and injuries. And that mass police violence, Layton and Matlow put forward a motion that we should have a judge look into it, which is true. But everyone voted against it. Of the people running for re-election, only 3 people voted for that judicial inquiry. So that means if we want police accountability in the city, which I do, we're a hard line on defunding by 50% in the Socialist Alliance, but I do support policing for certain issues like domestic violence and violent crime. There have been 2 police officers in my family, but I don't like what they're doing these days. And I was talking to someone the other day who just said, they don't even walk a beat anymore. And they just hide in their cars when there's any, they're not actually making the street safer. They do this weird BS going after people for sleeping in a park or something like this. It's just keeping up the authoritarianism. It's not about safety. It's about power. That's the thing. Cops are not keeping us safe. They're enforcing power. So, that's got to change. And the only way to do that, at the very least, you need counselors who will vote differently. So you need them to vote into the judicial inquiry. That's where the votes could have made a difference. Now, the human rights approach, everybody did vote for it because it sounded great. And it shows they're voting based on the way it sounds, partly. They're like, oh, yeah, sure, human rights. I'm not going to vote against that. I'm going to cut with my pants down. But then we turn around and did the exact opposite. That's going through the courts partly now. There are some challenges to those human rights violations that did occur. I tried to report them in real time. You can hear the reporting of me talking to 301, et cetera, the day of Lamport 2, saying, hey, there are human rights violations occurring right now. And I was informed that human rights violations are not an emergency. Now, of course, surely some human rights violations are an emergency. I mean, murder is a human rights violation if you have the right to not be murdered. But if you just tell them, hey, there are human rights violations, they tell you right away, no, that's not an emergency, human rights, whatever. That's what I was told. And it's recorded. That's the most urgent reason in terms of right now. There's lots of, I'm always learning about politics. I could have run 5 years from now, 10 years from now, but I have to do it right now because we need a whole slate of candidates, and candidate search is not over yet for the Socialist Alliance. If anybody wants to run and likes the Socialist Alliance platform, get in touch with us. We'll help you if you need help filing your papers. And we need people to run in every ward who support an agenda like defunding the police, like actually having police accountability, because right now we have rampant authoritarianism and Tories at the head of it.
Mm-hmm. So I'd actually like to ask you a little later after about a lot of your platform, but for now, I'd like to know, you have this lived experience, you have these political views, and you've mentioned Mike Layton. He was city councilor in the area for more than 12 years in Ward 19, Ward 11, and he was considered fairly popular and a trusted voice in the community. What do you think you can do to earn that voter trust for University of Rosedale?
Well, for one thing, people can see my correspondence with Mike Layton over the last maybe 2 years as his constituent, and you can see some of the kind of issues that I brought to him. And you can see that it's not as though he and I think radically differently. He told me himself that we need more progressive counselors in the suburban wards to get a lot of things through, because he can agree with me and say, well, but I'm just one vote. And, so that's the situation. And like I was saying, I was hoping to encourage him to run for mayor. At this point, I'll be volunteering for Gil Penalosa, who hired Diana Chan McNally to run his campaign. A very smart move, I would say, because I was also suggesting that maybe she should run for mayor. I was like, who can do it? Who can actually? I asked Gru of the encampment activists to run. Lots of people don't want to do it. And in fact, there's 7 people don't even want to run again. I mean, they either want to do provincial or do some other job, dippers who aren't running again this year. But it's a difficult situation for the city to have all these counselors not really checking the police. Going back to Mike Layton, I mean, look, I supported Olivia Chow. You can go back through my Facebook pictures. I was campaigning online for her in my spare time. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool leftist. And like many people who have worked for the NDP, and you can hear all about it, by the way, in the podcast Blueprints of Disruption by Jesse McLean about the attempt to reform the NDP and make it a truly progressive party. People are tired with not being able to go far enough. And my hope at the time was in the case where, let's say, I ran and Mike Layton didn't run for mayor and I ended up running against him, you know, some people in the alliance said, well, that'd be kind of awkward. You're running against like a trusted person. But then I ran into someone else, an activist whose judgment I really trust in the park. And she said exactly what I was thinking, which is that, no, if you run against Mike Layton, you make space for him. You widen the Overton window so that he can take on more progressive positions without seeming as radical. So, you know, the Socialist Alliance is more radical than the NDP, which is what we need. And it has to be a groundswell that starts at the municipal level.
So first thing I'd like to ask you, and you've already mentioned shelters and tent encampments and affordable housing.
Right. Well, I mean, what some cities have done is merely limit the density of encampments, which is what some people working on the ground also agree with. If you get one encampment that's just too dense, it does create problems. And we have lots of park space in Toronto, so encampments should be spread out. There should be some recommended campsites that are kind of out of the way, but not too far from services that you say, well, try to camp here. We'll have a bit more, you know, we'll send some, you know, fire extinguishers, have more resources there. This is what the city should be doing. Unfortunately, it's all being done by activists as far as, like, you know, supporting encampments. That's why ESN got, you know, activist group of the year last year for the Now magazine. Are you asking something on encampments or the housing crisis in general?
I guess, yeah, like just your platform and your approach to what you would do to help with affordable housing and, yeah, you know, dealing with the encampments and the closure of shelters.
Right. Well, so in general, we need basic needs to be prioritized in our budget. And mostly people agree on what a basic need is. If it came to it, we could vote on it. Like, what we could all vote, which need is more basic than which. And it's relative. It's not binary. Some needs are more basic than others. Food and shelter are probably the two most basic, other than maybe oxygen and like normal earth temperature, which sounds like a joke, but it's not because of climate change. But anyway, that's a pretty basic need, having normal earth temperature. Maybe it's very closely related to the need for food, but that's not climate's definitely a municipal issue as well, but it's not what you're getting at. So, but to zoom out in that way, we have to fund basic needs first. And if the city spends money on basic needs and then doesn't have enough left for other issues, that's when it goes and asks the province and the feds to print more or otherwise provide more, because the basic needs are the priority. If you do it the other way around, you spend on the fancy stuff that makes your donors happy, and then you say, oh, we don't have enough left over for a universal food subsidy for our citizens. Then when you go asking the province or the feds to bail you out, you're negotiating from a worse position because you don't have your basic needs met. Like as collectively, you know, and it does happen collectively because people have to talk to their MPs individually as well. And, you know, people need if their basic needs are met, they have the resources to get engaged in politics and negotiate for the rest. And it is a collective negotiation when the city needs money from the province or the feds, because every person can talk to their MP, for instance. And that's one thing that Tory said that I agreed with when I attended council in person two Wednesdays ago. We don't control the printer in Toronto. The feds do. So if we had all three levels of government aligned, we could say we need to print money for basic needs, and then we'll see if we have enough left over for everything else. Right now, we have it bass ackwards. We have the most wealthy city in the world by some metrics, you know, at least like livable quality of life, theoretically. You know, we have all the amenities you would need to have that quality of life, that kind of wealth, I mean. And we have a rampant housing crisis. And it's driven partly by authoritarianism. It's very punitive, the approaches that were taken. I mean, just look at the encampment clearings and the money that was wasted. They spent money just to be punitive. It wasn't like they were trying to save money. It has been covered by Layton and by Wong Tam and Council, how it is cheaper to house people. That's all in the record. And, you know, the numbers worked out. It's much cheaper to house people than to pay for, you know, jail time, shelter time, you know, hospital time, all this stuff. It's way more expensive. So, you know, that's the simple answer. It's cheaper to house people. The Wong Tam's motion was to get the feds to kick in the money to get the ball rolling, but that ultimately the program would pay for itself. And we need to keep pressing them on that and that kind of thing. We have to fund basic needs first, and then we negotiate for what we still need from the province and the feds.
You've talked about it. We wrote about it a lot online, but police reform.
You can see two depositions that I gave the Police Services Board on Substack. The second one's in the comments of the article. And, I already mentioned in this interview, we need to defund by at least 50%. If Doug Ford can cut city council in half, we can cut the police in half. And most of what they're doing is not addressing violent crime, which is why they have guns. So I'm talking about armed police, which is you know, you could change it so there were unarmed police in Canada, like they have in the UK, but we don't have that. So we have to be careful that when we're having the discussion, you know, like I was showing the platform to somebody from Scotland and I had to explain it, and you realize that like cops can't be unarmed here. So whenever you're sending cops, it's like sending a gun to a knife fight. You know, like if you send cops to people sleeping in a park, it's like, why are you sending people with guns to the situation? I mean, I said that to John Burnside a couple of weeks ago to his face. It's like, why are you bringing armed people here? You know, so the police need to focus on violent crime. I would say pretty much 100% of their budget should be spent on addressing violent crime. Sleeping in a park is not a violent crime. They also should have democracy at work in the police force. That would be another point at which we could have a sort of an error thrown if the orders the police get are immoral. This should be also at the individual level. There should be a test that you give to individual officers to give them an immoral order to test if they will refuse. And if someone won't refuse an immoral order, they're done. You know, I mean, you know, whatever, three strikes or something, but like you can't have people who have no moral compass with guns. That's not the idea. You're supposed to have good people who have a moral compass, who know when an order is wrong, and you need to start testing somehow. You've got to do that. And the other check is having votes among the officers, just like any kind of worker managed cooperative. You can watch the economist Richard Wolff for all the details on how this should work. He calls it democracy at work, partly for a branding reason. It's in America, socialism is a dirty word. And by the way, I'm not a communist. I believe in personal property. I believe in government programs, big government in the sense of government programs, not big government, lots of laws, because I'm anti-authoritarian first, like I was saying. If you watch Richard Wolff, he explains how it should all work. Have a worker council meeting on the police force every week where officers can show up and vote on policy. And you might find out that most of the cops agree that the orders they're getting from the city manager's office are reprehensible. I would submit that it probably would be the majority of police disagree with the encampment clerics. And even if it were non-binding, well, why don't we have that vote so we know? It's just data. Don't we want to know the truth?
For the next one, I'll probably combine them together, but funding other public services like childcare and public transit.
Yes, we want transit to be free at the point of use and to be paid for basically on your income tax. Same is true really of childcare. It's a social good. If transit's free at the point of use, it's better for the environment. If children get childcare, it's better for the social environment because they get more care. They grow up into people who create a better world for your kids to live with. You know, it's also a matter of privacy. Transit that's free at the point of use is better for privacy. I started the hashtag boycott Presto a long time ago. I don't use Presto. Presto is a surveillance system. Similar systems in Vancouver have already been confirmed to be used to track illegal immigrants. So if you support illegal immigrants, you should boycott Presto and similar systems. And it will also be used for targeted ads. They're going to roll out digital ads onto the subway eventually. And probably they'll use info in Presto to figure out what ad to show you combined with your phone and all that stuff. And, you know, there were instances of a Metrolinx officer using Presto data to ask a woman out on a date, like looking up her info and contacting her via Presto. Police have used Presto data without a warrant. And there's the whole climate change thing where we should all be taking transit. And if you really like your fancy car, guess what? If we have free transit, there's more room on the road for you.
You've also mentioned that you've been very vocal against John Tory online, throughout the political process. In terms of the potential for a strong mayor system, as a city councilor, how would you keep the mayor accountable?
Huh. You mean if the strong mayor system was passed?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. That's a good and difficult question. I mean, unfortunately, the deeper issue here is John Tory's job with Rogers, because clearly he gets preferential treatment in the media. And that is a layer of accountability that goes beyond the strong mayor system. In fact, it increases the mayor's accountability in the media, because right now the mayor can say, oh, well, I'm just one vote, even though Tory whips the vote all the time and successfully. So Gil Penalosa put this quite well at, I think it was his first event that I went to. We were sitting around a park. Actually, there's a video of him answering a question on encampments on Miguel's channel. He's one of our other candidates from the same day. The video is from the same day. He he said something similar. You know, he also said we shouldn't evict people without mutual consent from parks. You know, we don't want to play whack-a-mole anyway, just moving people around from park to park. So he was saying that on the strong mayor point, he was saying John Tory doesn't need a strong mayor system because he gets everything he wants. If John Tory wants to whip the vote, he does, and it succeeds. That was my impression, and it was also Gill's impression, who's been following very closely. You might imagine how he's running for mayor. And so the strong mayor system, if anything, it sounds like it's in case somebody beats Tory. That's what it's there for. In case somebody has to replace Tory, I mean, who can't whip the vote as well. They want to be able to install, they want to be able to keep doing that, but the mechanisms that allow Tory to whip the vote might not be there because the new, you know, red Tory that they managed to install as mayor, if they can, maybe won't have a job at Rogers, or he won't have the same relationship with councillors that he does. And so they want to be able to keep doing that, which is why they want the strong mayor system. Currently, they don't need it because Tory already does it. But what it will mean is that right now, Tory has the excuse that Tory has right now will not be available. Right now, Tory says, oh, well, I'm just one vote. And he also says, I don't direct police, which is also like. So anyway, it increases media accountability for one thing. And that was the same mechanism. By the way, speaking of John Tory, when you brought him up, I was actually going to mention, I'm realizing now it's even more relevant than I thought, the press conference that Torch put on outside of Tory's condo. I'm one of the co-founders of Torch, and we put on a news conference that you can see at torch.help outside of Tory's condo. You know, it's there because people were fighting charges, these abhorrent charges that were completely illegitimate from the city. We needed to put media pressure on the crown. And that same kind of media pressure can be applied to the mayor in a strong mayor system, because when you know that it's a strong mayor, then they can't say, oh, well, it's not my fault. I was just, you know, secretly whipping the vote behind the scenes, but I'm just one vote. So you definitely have to amp up the media pressure on a mayor in under a strong mayor system. That being said, I oppose the strong mayor system. I don't think we should have that at all.
Mm-hmm. Great. So just two more questions. Are there any other final thoughts you would like to add?
I mean, one thing I'll reiterate, you know, I work for the NDP. I want everyone to listen to Blueprints of Disruption. It's very eye-opening in terms of what needs to change on the left. And we're trying to learn from those lessons. I would encourage everyone involved on the left and the right to listen to Blueprints of Disruption and attend a new demo chat on Twitter. As far as, you know, the lessons that I learned by being involved in party politics, that some of those best lessons are available from those two sources, from the podcast and the basically ongoing Twitter space. I host an open mic every Wednesday in Little Italy in the Riding at 669 College. My partner Spectralize is also a regular performer there. You can look up her music. If I get elected, she'll have more time to write music. So a vote for me is also a vote for local music, and I'll be able to run even more music events and that kind of thing. You may have seen my posters for anarchist piano lessons around the city. And I do trade piano lessons for political volunteer hours, which is something I'm just setting up right now. We talked about shelter and food. We do need universal subsidies. One thing I will mention, you'll see this addressed in my campaign speech at adamgolding.ca, is the perverse incentive that we have in the society of the following kind. In the case of, in the case of the tiny shelters, which is what I mentioned in the speech, there's a perverse incentive for people to die in the cold. What does that mean? Well, if there's a fire in a tiny shelter, fire insurance premiums go up. But exposure deaths are not even counted. An article came out recently, I think it was CBC, that the coroner general should start counting the numbers of exposure deaths. It's not tracked, let alone taxed. And so it's much cheaper for the city if someone dies in the cold than if they survive a tiny shelter fire that ups their insurance premiums. And these bean counters just work backwards from the numbers. So you have to actually tax people to fine the city the same way the insurance company is fining them for exposure deaths, but you have to track them and count them and multiply by an appropriate figure. And you know, you also have a reverse incentive with carbon, right? It's free basically to emit carbon despite the cost being quite significant. And there was a parallel to another issue. I was trying to draw a parallel between several. What was the other one we were talking about?
All right, so for my last question, what would you like to tell voters in the lead up to the election, and how can they learn more about your campaign?
Well, turn out and vote. no matter who you vote for, please vote. This is a crucial election for our city. Turnout is likely to be lower in this than even was in the provincial and in the federal elections, but you can actually make a difference here in a way that you can't in party politics, because we're not bound by party. That being said, we do have a group called the socialistalliance.ca that you should look up. We are not a party in the traditional sense. We do not have a party whip mechanism. We are likely to codify radical honesty as one of our core principles. We've been discussing it the last few meetings, actually, just to get it right. You know, when I was a kid, my mother didn't let me watch City Hall because she was afraid I'd become a politician and become dishonest. And that is not what we are doing here. We are here to get honest feedback. And everybody, please disagree with our platform and please tell us why. Not with us, not with the political personality, the platform, the policy. This is the conversation we need to have. This is why, you know, this flyer here is just black and white. There's no picture of me on this. No, this is just the rules that we need to change. Okay, and I work backwards from every argument I have heard from activists, from governments, from people that I talk to on the phone, from the news media. This is the best I can do to work backwards from what people are saying to what we should do. And where I've got it wrong, you need to tell me, you need to tell us. We have a convention every month, the Socialist Alliance monthly convention. You can find it, go through our website to our Facebook group, join that. You'll get the event notifications. Just email us or whatever, go through the website. And every month people can come and tell us why the platform is wrong. And we will try to change it based on rational discussion and some democratic process. When I worked on the phone for a traditional political party, it was not like this. As far as I could tell, people's feedback had very little ability to change the platform. They listened to experts, quote unquote, and large donors. And I think that's probably true across the board in party politics. That is not what we're doing. We've been getting feedback for months before we've collected any donations. And while we are starting to enter the donation phase as the election approaches, what we really need is a public conversation that is healthy and functioning. So please come and tell us why we're wrong and we'll talk about it.
That was Adam Golding, Ward 11 candidate and member of the Municipal Socialist Alliance. Toronto's municipal election is scheduled for October 24th this year. I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative.